take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, topers and toquettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, June 2nd, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's getting close to 420 right here in beautiful Aspen, Colorado. There's a little bit of a breeze, but temperatures are in the 70s. I can see the gondolas going up, the tram there going up the mountain, covered in green, just nothing but beautiful green pine trees and aspens and other trees I don't recognize. Plus, our favorite kind of trees, legal buds. That's right, all sorts of great cannabis. My thanks goes out to the folks in Empire, California at the Mountain Wellness? I can't remember the exact name, but it's our good friend Lively Libra. You remember Lively Libra from the Libra Lounge back in the 420 radio days, and she's a bud tender and helped us pick out some mighty fine strains. What this is Golden Goat that I've got today, and it's just the most interesting smell, but we're going to be enjoying that, and we are on the second floor, the rooftop deck here at the Gant in Aspen, Colorado, where the normal Aspen Legal Seminar is taking place, and hopefully in hour two, the party starts here at 5:30, so mountain time, so that's the second half hour of hour two, so I'm hoping we get some of the attendees in here to talk a little bit to you, give you a little flavor of what's going on here in Aspen, Colorado. The presentations today have been fantastic, and all sorts of great people here at the event. Our good friend Danica Noble is here, and she gave a presentation on all the different federal agencies that are involved in this fight about changing and reforming our marijuana laws, and how some of them are kind of doing some good things, like the EPA, some of them are doing some bad things, like the IRS, some of them are kind of in between, like Congress, and it was a great presentation. Unfortunately, I didn't have the time today to be able to knock out any of the audio editing for today's presentations. I'll do that later tonight. So tomorrow, I'll bring you some of that, some of those federal agency information, if you're interested in how the actual mechanisms and wheels of government are churning here, trying to reform our marijuana laws. Paul Armentano, of course, did a fantastic presentation as well. We'll get you some of that because he is the man when it comes to marijuana research. And we've got a bunch of great guests. The county sheriff here, the Pitkin County Sheriff, Joe DeSalvo, opened up the event. It's great to have a sheriff talking to you reasonably and intelligently about marijuana. That was pretty amazing. And also, we have a retired U.S. attorney from Kansas who is here. He's going to be speaking either tomorrow or Saturday. I don't know when. But a U.S. attorney, and to get his perspective on the war on drugs, that's going to be very fascinating. So we've got all sorts of great stuff coming up on today's show. Of course, right after the headlines and behind the headlines, we're going to take a look at that wrongful death lawsuit taking place here in Colorado over the man who murdered his wife after he ate some edibles. In the drug war data mines, we take a look at a new study on that New Zealand data. Remember the New Zealand IQ data? Well, there's a new study on that data that actually has lots of good news for those of us who use cannabis, but you better keep flossing. Also, today is Thursday, so we've got another edition of our Cops Say Legalize Drugs segment. And a good friend of the show, Patrick Nightingale from Pittsburgh Normal, will be calling in. We're going to talk a little bit about asset forfeiture. And then, at the end of the show, time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at balancing consumer safety, political optics, and freedom. And this comes because of today being June 2nd and the day that my home state of Oregon is now allowing adults to have extracts, edibles, and topicals. So we're going to take a look at the rules around that and how they could be a little bit better. But they're not bad. Hey, legalization always beats prohibition. We're back with the news right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
Gondrepreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Gondrepreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Gondrepreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping Gondrepreneurs grow.
Growing green to generate more green.
Hello to all you happy herbalizers, smiling trippy hippies, and everyone who believes in freedom and tolerance. This is The Grow Show, and I'm Kyle Cushman.
From food to fuel, from remedy to resource.
Welcome my guest, Ed Rosenthal, the guru of ganja. Let me ask you, right now I hear your lighter clicking. Are you smoking indoor or are you smoking sun grown?
What am I smoking? I'm smoking concentrate.
Way to get out of the answer there. So you're truly like the king, right? You just clap your hands and somebody brings you a bowl and you're all set, right?
I wish that were the case.
The Grow Show with Kyle Cushman, only on CannabisRadio.com. You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I said, on this program, what do they want? My grandchildren and the monster. Oh, did I scare you?
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Thursday, June 2nd, 2016. Portland, Oregon. It became legal today for adults 21 and older in Oregon to purchase marijuana-infused edibles, tinctures, topicals, oils, concentrates, and extracts. Marijuana sales in Oregon are still conducted at the state's 426 medical marijuana dispensaries. An early sales bill passed last year to enable recreational marijuana purchases at medical marijuana dispensaries. However, those purchases were limited to just 7 grams of marijuana or marijuana seedlings. Edibles and other products remained off limits, presumably to protect the supply of those items for medical consumers. While edibles, topicals, and extracts are available, recreational consumers are limited to 15 milligrams of THC in edibles, 6% THC in topicals, and 1 gram of extract. Lansing, Michigan. Proponents of a recreational marijuana legalization initiative in Michigan turned in about 354,000 signatures on the June 1st deadline. Marijuana Business Daily reports that the group, called MI Legalize, turned in roughly 100,000 more signatures than the required 252,523. Now the Secretary of State's office will validate the signatures, and if 71.4% of those turned in are accepted, Michigan will join Nevada and Maine in voting on marijuana legalization this fall. Florida is also on the ballot to vote for medical marijuana legalization. Daytona Beach, Florida. Daytona Beach became the latest city in Florida to decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana. Wednesday night, the city council voted unanimously to approve the ordinance, which makes possession of 20 grams or less of marijuana a civil fine. Daytona Beach joins Miami Beach, Hallandale Beach, Key West, West Palm Beach, Wilton Manors, Tampa, Miami-Dade County, Broward County, Palm Beach County, and Volusia County in approving similar decriminalization ordinances. Salt Lake City, Utah. Utah medical marijuana proponents have found a new legislative sponsor as they gear up to take another run next year at pushing through a measure to make pot legal for people with certain medical conditions. Representative Gage Frohrer, a Republican from Huntsville, said Wednesday that he plans to sponsor a medical marijuana bill that combines the best parts of the two competing cannabis proposals that died during the 2016 session. He is open to suggestions, but he envisions it helping people with a wide array of medical conditions and having a THC component, the psychoactive compound in marijuana. Utah already allows a marijuana extract called cannabidiol to be used by those with severe epilepsy as long as they obtain it from other states. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It could take up to 2 years to write regulations and make medical marijuana available through retailers in Pennsylvania to eligible patients, Pennsylvania's Secretary of Health said Wednesday. Before that, the Department of Health aims to publish regulations in July to guide parents on how to bring medical marijuana bought legally from another state into Pennsylvania to administer to a child with a qualifying condition. Secretary of Health Dr. Karen Murphy said, by the end of the year, the department expects to publish temporary regulations for growers and processors. Democratic Governor Tom Wolf signed legislation in April, making Pennsylvania the 24th state to legalize a comprehensive medical marijuana program. The next day, the department got started on writing a raft of regulations, which are required before medical marijuana can be grown and sold in Pennsylvania. Omaha, Nebraska. Researchers at the University of Nebraska at Omaha have discovered that Nebraska marijuana arrests increased 11% following legal marijuana sales in Colorado. The study, reported by Nebraska's KVNO News, also claims that enforcing Nebraska's marijuana prohibition cost taxpayers $10 million in 2014. The greatest increases in marijuana arrests were found in the counties bordering Colorado and the interstate crossing Nebraska from Colorado. Washington, D.C. The National Anti-Legalization Group Project SAM has announced that its political arm, SAM Action, has raised $300,000 to oppose efforts to legalize marijuana by initiative in various states this fall. In a press release reported by Marijuana.com, SAM Action is hiring organizers in Las Vegas and Los Angeles. The successful applicants must be fluent in Spanish, suggesting that Project SAM is counting on mobilizing a strong anti-legalization vote amongst Hispanics who have historically shown less support than African Americans and whites. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Thursday, June 2nd, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Legal to listen to all over the world. We're just not sure about France. CannabisRadio.com.
Dr. Dabber, hurry! Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
It's time for cannabis facts about teen drug use from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
The Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our cannabis focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we want to take a look at a case here in Colorado that was mentioned by Danica Noble in her presentation, and I'm sure others will be talking about it. But it's the first ever wrongful death lawsuit filed against a maker and distributor of a marijuana product. In this case, we're talking about edible marijuana products in the state of Colorado. And the case is the case of Richard and Christine Kirk. The case of Richard Kirk. Richard Kirk is accused of murdering his wife, shooting her. And part of his case is that he had consumed a marijuana edible and supposedly consumed 100 milligrams of THC, according to the reports, 10 servings, according to Colorado. So the lawsuit here. And they say, you know, according to the 911 call, Christine Kirk, the wife, said that he was behaving erratically and psychotically, and he got a gun, and the 911 operator could hear her saying, quote, he was talking like it was the end of the world and wanted her to shoot him, and that he was totally hallucinating, end quote. And the 911 operator hears the gunshots and the screaming, and that was it. Now, the guardians, I believe it's the grandparents, I'm not sure who the guardians are, but the guardians of their three children who were there in the home for the killing and heard the screams and saw the gunshot and the blood and the death. The guardians are suing. This is their wrongful death lawsuit against a Colorado edible manufacturer and a Colorado dispensary. And the claim is they recklessly failed to warn about the product's potency and side effects, and that the THC-infused candy he ate played a key role in the night he allegedly shot and killed his wife. Now, the wrongful death lawsuit is against Gaia's Garden, LLC, and its distributor, Nutritional Elements, Incorporated. Alleges that, quote, the edible producers negligently, recklessly, and purposefully concealed vital dosage and labeling information, end quote. It also claims the packaging doesn't warn buyers that the high from edibles could lead to, quote, paranoia, psychosis, and hallucinations, end quote. So this case is the kind of case that can have a very severe impact on what's going on with the green rush throughout, what, four states now, and with California and others coming on board, we could be anywhere from 6 to 10 states with legal marijuana. And it's important as we address this that we don't just dismiss it. I hear some people that want to dismiss, oh, marijuana doesn't cause people to become violent. This is blown out of proportion. There was something else wrong. We need to take a serious look here at if indeed this could be a result from someone, an inexperienced user with way too much ingested cannabis. And if this is the kind of thing that can happen, we need to get in front of this and we need to make sure that we have warnings and education about this. I'll talk about this a little bit more in the Radical Rant as well, about the limiting of potency and serving size and how these things should be marked up. But it's a little troubling to me that this case and the murder case that he's going, this is a civil case. This is the wrongful death lawsuit. This is a lawsuit for millions in damages that we're talking about here. I don't know that they listed how much here in the news story, but it is just a wrongful death lawsuit. I don't see what the damages are listed or not. The candy that he ate was a Karma Candy Orange Ginger. Contains 10 milligrams per serving of THC, and it was a 10-pack. So he ate a 10-pack of these little chews and supposedly got paranoid and hallucinatory and violent. If this case is to go to trial and the defendants are found guilty on this, the manufacturer and the distributor, this could have serious repercussions for the rest of the states. Now, I believe the states have already started to learn from this. Colorado is already doing a better job with public education and labeling of these items. But this needs to go further. We need to have as much education as possible on this. I'm a professional pothead, and I tread lightly around edibles. So newbies ought to definitely beware of the power of the edible.
Unbelievable.
Hey folks, that sound means that it's 420. It is actually 420 Mountain Time because I'm here in Aspen, Colorado, coming to you live from the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar, second floor rooftop deck at the Gant Resort in Aspen. Come about 5:30 Mountain, in about 70 minutes is when the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar welcoming reception happens. We might get a few people on mic for you, so stick around.
Being green is good. Growing green is good. Making green is great. CannabisRadio.com.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Cannabis Confidential with Dr. Dina. Candid.
I want to give you the inside story.
Captivating.
I want to introduce you to my kind and amazingly talented friends.
Compelling.
We get to meet some of the most amazing cannabis activists and warriors around.
Listen in as medical marijuana pioneer Dr. Dina shares never-before-heard stories, chats with cannabis insiders and celebrity friends, and provides invaluable perspective and insight into one of the fastest-growing industries in the world.
I want to share with you what was once confidential information. Let's expose the truth, discuss the issues, and learn the facts.
Cannabis Confidential, only on CannabisRadio.com.
This is the Russ Belville Show, annoying Kevin Sabet since 2012.
Don't want to spend money on a night out, but don't know what to do other than watching TV or playing video games? Consider playing guitar, bass, banjo, or mandolin. The instrument will give you hours of entertainment with friends with minimal expense. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension, downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Drug War Data Mines, we get a press release from Duke University about marijuana users and long-term health. And the study is a study on 1,000 New Zealanders, long-term study, from birth to age 38. And it found that people who smoked marijuana for up to 20 years have more gum disease, but otherwise do not show worse physical health than non-smokers. So make sure you're flossing out there, tokers and tokettes, and maybe brush two or three times a day, because aside from gum disease, according to this study, the long-term physical health of tokers is just fine. This is an international research team. They measured lung function, systemic inflammation, several different measures of metabolic syndrome, including waist circumference, HDL cholesterol, triglycerides, blood pressure, glucose control, and body mass index. Now, the tobacco users also had more gum disease, as well as reduced lung function, systemic inflammation, and other indicators of poor metabolic health. So what they found here in particular, now this was with the Duke University, Arizona State University, King College in the UK, and University of Otago in New Zealand. And what they found is an increase in periodontal disease from age 26 to 38 as far as the heavy cannabis users. And they even corrected for whether or not they also smoked tobacco, whether or not they also used alcohol, and whether or not they brushed their teeth less or flossed less. They tried to control for every variable they could consider. And even controlling for brushing teeth and flossing, cannabis consumers and tobacco users had more gum disease. Now, all sorts of reasons this could be. The smoke in your mouth, around your gums, maybe that's just a bad thing. Maybe it's the heat, you know, taking in warm air all the time in the gums. Maybe in the case of cannabis consumption, the dry mouth you get might help lead to this increase in gum disease. But it's interesting how this is reported, because I'm reading to you from the Durham, North Carolina, you know, the press release from Duke. And they also point out this is the same study data, by the way, where Kevin Samet gets that 8 IQ point loss. Remember that one? This is the same data set. So you're going to hear this attack. Well, you're going to say marijuana is so good for your health. Then you also have to accept all this negative IQ data. But the IQ data has been debunked. The twins study that came out of King's College in London showed that among identical twins, one who smoked and one who did not, there was no significant differences in IQ or cognitive function. There's been other studies that have backed that up. So don't worry too much about that. What's interesting to me is how the reporting I see on this is leading with the gum disease. Most of the reporting out there is leading with, oh, pot smoking causes terrible gum disease, and kind of ignores the point that all the other health things they said would be bad for us, the lungs, the heart, the metabolic, weren't a problem. Now, the one guy who did this pretty well, Christopher Ingraham at Washington Post, did say his post was, chronic marijuana use is about as bad for your health as not flossing. Which is I don't know if that's a completely accurate way to put it, but it's definitely closer than most of the outlets have put this. And what they also found is that there were some findings, and this is stuff we've seen in other literature as well. Marijuana use was associated with better health outcomes. According to the researchers, quote, findings showed that cannabis use was associated with slightly better metabolic health, smaller waist circumference, lower body mass index, better lipid profiles, and improved glucose control, end quote. Now, he said the associations are small, not strong enough to recommend to say, yes, cannabis does help this, but we're seeing that most of what was predicted about cannabis use and health has turned out to be completely fallacious. And that, aside from the gum disease angle, I think we're doing okay. And it's interesting how this study, too, is, you know, the differentiation on this. When they talk about the difference between a heavy marijuana consumer and a heavy tobacco consumer, and the standard for a heavy marijuana consumer is someone who's smoking a joint a day or two joints a day or maybe, you know, a few joints a day. But a heavy tobacco user could go through packs of cigarettes a day. So if it's smoke, if it's burning vegetable matter itself, whether it be tobacco or cannabis, but the hydrocarbons you get from burning, you know, combusting plant material, if that's what's harmful to the gums and the general health, then it would stand to reason the tobacco smokers are going to get a whole lot more of that, smoking so much more that they smoke. It'd be interesting to see some of these researchers try to quantify their research when they compare tobacco and cannabis use to compare the smokers who smoke one or two cigarettes a day to the cannabis consumers. It seems almost unfair to the tobacco consumers. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of people that smoke
ounces of marijuana a day. They're out there, but we don't see a lot of them showing up in the studies. All right, stay tuned. Our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment's coming up next. We got Patrick Nightingale joining us from Pennsylvania. We'll get an update on what's happening there and his take on civil asset forfeiture when we come back in just 2 minutes.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Cannabis use isn't the only thing growing, so are we. Grow with us, CannabisRadio.com.
Gondrepreneur.com, your guide to the cannabis business world. Gondrepreneur.com is a comprehensive resource for cannabis professionals and entrepreneurs. Download the Gondrepreneur app on your smartphone or tablet to catch up on cannabis industry news, scroll through our daily job listings, and learn about successful cannabis companies, executives, and investors. Gondrepreneur.com, helping Gondrepreneurs grow.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Marijuana is not addictive, but listening to the Russ Belville Show is.
Coming soon to a city near you, Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. Get all your cannabis accounting, legal, and compliance questions answered by their knowledgeable panel of industry experts who want to help your cannabis boom. Whether you're a grower, dispensary operator, or a newcomer to the field, your cannabis needs Cannabis Finance Bootcamp. For information on upcoming events, visit CannabisFinanceBootcamp.com.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition, reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalized drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. It's 33 after the hour, and joining us today for our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment, we've got Patrick Nightingale. Hello, Patrick. Welcome back.
Thank you very much, Russ. It's a pleasure to have a chance to speak to you again on this obviously very important subject.
Absolutely. And before we delve into the asset forfeiture, you know, we've seen a couple of things happen in Pennsylvania recently, most specifically the medical marijuana law finally getting passed, and we've seen some moves towards decriminalization. Can you give us a quick update where we're at politically in Pennsylvania right now?
Yeah, absolutely. We have passed a medical marijuana bill. It is a limited cannabis products bill that will provide for a system of licensing 25 grows and 50 dispensaries to treat 17 qualifying conditions. Unfortunately, it is not the most patient-friendly bill because we do not have home grow, we do not have smoking, and we do not have distribution of flower material. But it is a bill that passed with widespread bipartisan support in the Pennsylvania legislature, and we are cautiously optimistic that this is a bill that can provide the foundation for a robust medical cannabis industry here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Relative to decriminalization, Philadelphia obviously decriminalized in 2014 and has seen an 80% reduction in their arrests. We have a decriminalization ordinance in Pittsburgh that chief of police is working to implement right now. And we have seen decriminalization momentum in other cities such as Wilkes-Barre and Harrisburg. And State Representative Ed Gainey from right here in Pittsburgh, has introduced a statewide decriminalization bill that would reduce the penalties for possession of a small amount of marijuana from a $500 fine to a $100 fine, remove the criminal stigma by making it a summary offense as opposed to a misdemeanor offense, and removing any potential for incarceration. So, you know, even though in the past I've referred to Pennsylvania as the hinterlands of cannabis reform, we are seeing some steady reform here in the Keystone State.
That's great news. Thanks for giving us the rundown. Now let's talk a little bit about the subject we wanted to get into, and that is civil asset forfeiture. And this is something that a stat that I just heard recently, that for the first time ever, the cops have stolen more than the robbers. Can you tell people a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Civil asset forfeiture, when it was conceived, was designed as as some type of mechanism so that law enforcement could take the ill-gotten gains away from, you know, wealthy drug dealers. You've got a Colombian drug lord who's got boats and planes and stuff like that, and you might not be able to convict the drug lord, but you can seize his property and make it hurt in his wallet. That was the idea behind civil asset forfeiture. What we are seeing in practice, and it's something that you know, we were discussing at a recent ACLU conference in Washington, D.C., we have seen that it has turned into a way for police departments to fund their activities, and it has turned into, instead of going after those big assets that the drug lord possesses, they're going after the small assets that the nickel-and-dime drug dealer or the nickel-and-dime marijuana grower is possessing. In California, for example, the average civil asset forfeiture case is $8,000. That is not hurting the Colombian drug lord. That is punishing average Americans who, you know, may or may not be involved in any type of illegal drug activity, but they do not have the assets to go up against the government and to assert their rights and fight for their property.
Yeah, and for people that are new to this civil asset forfeiture thing, it's not required that the government actually proves that you committed a crime. They're actually charging your property with a crime, and it's guilty until proven innocent. So, like, if they charge your $8,000 with a crime, and it's going to cost you $10,000 in lawyer's fees to get it back, what's the point?
Exactly. They, you know, there is no requirement that there be any corresponding criminal complaint, prosecution, no involvement whatsoever, and the burden is a preponderance of the evidence burden, which is far lower than a proof beyond a reasonable doubt burden. If what we were doing is, you know, going after those assets for a known, you know, major drug distributor, then maybe there's some justification for this law enforcement technique, but it has been perverted into a technique to fund police departments. I mean, I've had chiefs of police tell me that their departments have literally become addicted to civil asset forfeiture funds because they need the money, because they've hired more officers or they've bought more toys or whatever the case may be. But if we have created a situation where our police departments need civil asset forfeiture funding in order to meet their bottom line, then we are doing the American public and our citizens a profound disservice.
Yeah, and this that stat I mentioned earlier, the civil asset forfeiture proceeds have now exceeded what the estimated value of what was stolen by robbers. The cops have actually taken more from people than the robbers have taken from people at this point. And it's not always people involved in the drug trade, Patrick. I'm sure you've got stories, and I've read many of them, of, you know, people doing perfectly innocuous things like transporting $15,000 in cash across state lines to go form a business across the country. And they get pulled over and busted, and bam, that cash is taken away.
You know, where I have seen it happen time and time again is with the young African-American male who is going out to California. He's got, you know, a possibility to do a hip-hop record deal. He needs some cash. He's going out there with $20,000 to fund his hip-hop career. And, you know, police take it and they say, okay, you know, if you want to come back to Kansas and fight for this money, you've got to prove that it was obtained from legitimate sources. And what if that performer received his cash from performing at concerts? How are you going to prove to a judge in Kansas or Missouri or wherever the case may be that your money was lawfully obtained? It's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. One of the worst examples that I have seen is what has been going on in Philadelphia until recently. There was one case where a young man was busted selling an eighth of weed from his parents' house, and the district attorney's office moved forward for a forfeiture on his parents' house. And it's, at some point in time, we have to say, what are we doing? We are the United States of America, where we pride ourselves on concepts such as freedom and liberty, and here we have the government literally stealing real property from people that had nothing to do with criminal behavior. We have gotten to a point where we must, absolutely must address this issue before it gets any further out of control.
And for the listeners out there, there is such a thing as criminal asset forfeiture, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. If you utilize property in the commission of a crime, for example, if you utilize your motor vehicle to transport a large quantity of narcotics and you are prosecuted and convicted for transporting those narcotics, then your motor vehicle is subject to forfeiture. If you have purchased real property with the proceeds from illegal activity and you are convicted of illegal activity, then your property is potentially subject to forfeiture. That is within the context of a criminal case. And under those circumstances, I don't think anyone has a real objection. Hey, you've been convicted of a crime. This property, whether it's a firearm, a car, real property, whatever the case may be, that was utilized in the commission of the crime. Then I think that, you know, even the defendant will acknowledge, okay, you know, I understand that I'm responsible for this. That is in the context of a criminal prosecution and the government proving your guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, as opposed to civil asset forfeiture, which is the seizure of property on the mere suspicion that the property may be involved with a crime or may be the proceeds of a crime, and then shifting the burden to the property owner to prove to a court by a preponderance of the evidence that it's their property. It shifts the burden to the person who owns the property to begin with. There is no burden on the part of the government to say, hey, this is illegal property. It is ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous.
So then is it in their best interest, them being the cops wanting the booty, is it their best interest to prosecute on the civil side because there's a lower standard to meet?
Oh, absolutely. And you see that going on as a routine matter of practice throughout the United States of America. Law enforcement agencies understand that if they have something that looks like drug proceeds, might be drug proceeds, they can have it seized, and the likelihood of the claimant, of the property owner ever coming back to assert their property rights is, you know, next to nothing. It is far better than, you know, seizing those assets and then filing a criminal complaint and having to go to court and having to, you know, face defense attorneys and to justify your seizure in that perspective. I have had law enforcement officers tell me time and time again that it's much easier for them to simply seize the assets than to actually file a criminal complaint and go through the criminal proceedings.
So they do this instead of, rather than in cooperation with. They're not doing both civil and criminal cases. They're foregoing the criminal side and just doing it on the civil side.
If you've got something that's kind of borderline, we're not sure if we've got a criminal case here. Well, at the very least, we know we can seize the assets.
Okay.
It makes it a lot easier for that police agency to, you know, seize those assets regardless of whether or not they've got a probable cause to file a criminal complaint.
Now, there's been a couple of states, I think New Hampshire is one of them, that have outlawed the civil asset forfeiture. Has to be criminal convictions to forfeit property. Is there anything like that happening in your area or that you know more about?
Yeah, we have a bill pending in the Pennsylvania legislature. And, you know, quite frankly, every law enforcement agency has risen up in opposition to it because it is jeopardizing their bottom line. It's jeopardizing their ability to generate revenue to their department. And they're going to tell legislators, it is hurting our ability to win the war on drugs. And, you know, Mr. Representative and Mrs. Senator, you know we have a heroin epidemic washing across this country and people are dying. Why would you take away any of the techniques that we have been utilizing, you know, quote, successfully for many, many years? So it is difficult in states that are more conservative, such as Pennsylvania, to convince our relatively conservative state legislature that this is, in essence, statutory thievery.
Wow. Patrick Nightingale out there with Pittsburgh Normal and working with other groups, I'm sure. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the rundown on this civil asset forfeiture. And if you want more information, where can people go website-wise?
I would say, you know, join us at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP.cc, or Cops Say No to Drugs.
Cops Say Legalize.
That's it. So, you know, join us at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Check out our website. And, you know, we have a group of law enforcement professionals, mostly retired, but who are willing to come forward and say, from my experience, this is an utter failure. And it's the voice of police officers and law enforcement that I think is going to have to take the lead in this reform.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Thank you so much, Patrick, for your wisdom there. We appreciate that. Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP.cc.
We don't limit how much you smoke, and we don't limit where you listen. Cannabis Radio is now on iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio.
The National Cannabis Industry Association presents the third annual Cannabis Business Summit and Expo. The most influential business event in the marijuana industry returns for 3 days in Oakland, California. Join your fellow industry leaders and policy influencers June 20th through 22nd for an in-depth educational experience and network with more than 3,000 cannabis professionals. The 2016 Cannabis Business Summit and Expo will feature keynote presentations from California Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom and NUMMI Organic Tea CEO Ahmed Rahim, giving you insight into cutting-edge policy discussions and the most innovative business practices. All this, plus the most comprehensive expo floor in the industry. The Cannabis Business Summit and Expo, June 20th through 22nd in Oakland. Don't miss out. Register right now at CannabisBusinessSummit.com and save 15% off registration using promo code RADIO15. That's CannabisBusinessSummit.com, promo code RADIO15.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
You know, during Dance with the Stars, I started feeling discomfort.
Yeah.
And not only that, I was doing these old man smells. And it was kind of embarrassing because, you know, all the Dancing with the Stars crew, cast and crew, you know, they were all young kids.
Yeah.
You know, and then all of a sudden, this old guy would come along and do one of those silent farts, you know, that you don't know you're doing it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you smell, and everybody go, what the hell smells? And, you know, and you knew it was me. And so I'd scurry off to the bathroom, you know. And that's when I knew that there was something wrong.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Christian convictions are under attack as never before.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it. And then in jail,
And one major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everybody. We're live in Aspen, Colorado at the Normal Aspen Legal Seminar. And today for the Radical Rant, I want to talk a little bit about balancing consumer safety, political optics, and freedom. And I'm reminded of the presentation that the sheriff of Pitkin County, this county's sheriff who presented here at the seminar, his name's Joe DeSalvo. And he talked about some of the early problems that occurred with marijuana legalization. One of them being people go into these pot shops in Aspen and they're like a kid in a candy store and they buy too much stuff. They buy too many edibles. They buy like an ounce, you know, they got too much weed. And then they leave it when they leave Aspen. And he actually talked about how they have an amnesty box at the Aspen airport that you can drop your weed in if you forgot and need to drop it off. You know, no questions asked, no problems. Because it is illegal to fly it out of state or anything, right? So, and I think it's illegal at the airport, for that matter. Anyway, but the other problem was, is people leaving edibles behind. And he talked about this case where one of the maids took the chocolate edibles home, took them home to her kids, and the kids had, you know, accidental ingestion, you know, and it was way too much, and they had to take them to the hospital. So that in his county, they started an educational campaign in Spanish and English to educate, you know, hotel staff, because you got a lot of hotels and resorts and stuff up here in Aspen and the area around it, that, you know, to not take home, not to eat or take home edibles that you don't know what they are, because they could be marijuana infused. And he also talks about the case of, you know, Christine Kirk, her murder, Richard Kirk, on trial, having eaten 10 milligram edibles and supposedly became psychotic and murdered his wife because of it. So he talked about how he'd like to see low serving sizes. We hear the same thing, you know, the story I told about, you know, today, Oregon, it's legal now for all adults to purchase edibles and tinctures and topicals and extract cartridges and such. But they have limits, too. You can only, if you're not a medical consumer, you know, the patients can still buy as much as they want as far as the edibles go. But if you're a recreational consumer, you can only buy 15 milligrams worth of edible total. And if you're buying a topical, it can only have 6% THC. And if you're buying a vapor cartridge, you can only buy 1 gram worth of vapor cartridges. That's it. Now, there's no database. There's no tracking. There's nothing stopping you from going to the pot shop on 24th and Sandy and buying that, and then going to the pot shop on 28th and Sandy, and then on 32nd and Sandy. You know, you could go to a bunch of pot shops and buy a whole bunch of different stuff, sure. But that's what I want to get to, is this, how do we balance this, right? Because we want to have consumer safety. We don't want these stories of kids overdosing on edibles and having bad effects. We don't want these stories of people hallucinating or getting psychotic on them and jumping out of hotel balconies or murdering their wives. On the other hand, we all need to recognize, and we seem to recognize this in the marijuana community really well when it comes to the driving issue. And we talk about how you can't come up with a 5 nanogram limit. You can't have a 5 nanogram per se DUID limit because marijuana is ingested differently by everyone. It's metabolized differently by everyone. You know, a newbie at 5 nanograms could be too high to drive, but, you know, a medical marijuana patient or a frequent recreational consumer, someone who's built up a tolerance, they could wake up at 15 nanograms, right? So we seem to understand that when it comes to the driving and the impairment issue, there's no magic number. So what makes us think we can come up with a magic number when it comes to edibles? See, the problem I have with this is when I return to Oregon, if I wanted to get some edibles, you're going to limit me to 15 milligrams? I might as well buy a regular cookie at 15 milligrams. 15 milligrams isn't going to touch me. I'm up in the 200, 300 milligram range when it comes to eating edibles. If I want to have a effect, right? I couldn't even get that here in Colorado. 100 milligrams is the limit here in Colorado as far as purchases. So, in essence, what you're doing here is forcing me to go shop at a whole bunch of different stores to collect enough edibles and eat all that edible product with all the attendant calories and fat and whatever else to get the effect I'm looking for that could be achieved with a single chew, a single taffy, a single cookie. So you're limiting, in a sense, you're limiting my choice, you're limiting my freedom, you're kind of forcing me to have to engage in practices that are more harmful, right? Aren't we all supposed to be about harm reduction? So isn't there a harm reduction angle in having a more potent edible available for people with the higher tolerances so that they're not eating more calories, eating more fats or whatever? See, imagine if we applied this to alcohol and we said, you know, if some high school kids got a hold of a bottle of tequila at 80 proof, why, they could drink that bottle of tequila and die. They could die of an alcohol overdose. But if they got a hold of a 40-ounce of beer, even if they chugged the whole thing, they'd never die. So let's limit alcohol to 5%. No more vodka, no more tequila, no more rum, no more Everclear for sure. Just 5% alcohols, you know, wines, ciders, even, you know, we're talking low alcohol wines, right? Ciders, beers. People would freak, right? Because people understand that there's 3-2 beer, there's Coors Light, and then there's your Everclear and your Bacardi 151. And they understand that if you're a noob, you don't line up 6 shots of Bacardi 151 and chug them. If you're, you know, if you're petite, you don't do that, right? We expect people to have a certain amount of personal responsibility for this, even though we know for sure that having these more potent alcohols out there are going to lead to alcohol poisonings and overdoses. We know it. It's a guaranteed statistical fact. But we accept it in the name of freedom, that the people have the freedom to, those who do want to drink and get fucked up, have the freedom to drink something a little more potent. Another comparison might be salsa, right? I went to this Mexican place in, Georgetown, Colorado, mountain town, on the way up here to Aspen. We stopped and got lunch. And they had these 9 different salsas you could pick from, and they were ranked on a scale of 1 to 13 on how hot they were. And so I got the 2 hottest ones. The one that was ranked at a 9 was their garlic habanero, and the one that was ranked at a 13, which had ghost peppers and scorpion peppers. And they were okay hot. I'm kind of a connoisseur of hot. But we didn't make all the salsas milds, because God forbid, what if a kid dipped a chip into one of those scorpion pepper, ghost pepper salsas and burned his mouth and screamed and had a terrible time? We don't limit the salsa potency because some kid might accidentally eat it. We keep the kid out of the hot salsa. And we educate the adults on the menu or labels on the bowls or whatever we have to do that says, hey, this stuff's devil hot. This stuff's like twice hot. Like, it's hot eating it and it's hot getting rid of it, if you get my drift. Don't eat this shit. It's hot. We educate people. We don't nerf the world. We don't reduce everything down to what's going to be the safest possible thing for a kid who accidentally gets into it. And it's more maddening on the alcohol side, because the alcohol being more potent can definitely kill the kid. The marijuana being more potent is not going to kill the kid. It's going to give him a bad trip for sure, but it's not going to kill him. And especially in light of what we've seen, and you've probably seen this go through your Facebook feeds, especially if you follow me, the FDA just approved Gummy Speed. Yes, they've approved an amphetamine drug, Speed, in a gummy form for children. I'm not making this up, folks. Gummy Speed for the kids. Gummy meth. Although I don't think it's a methamphetamine. I think it's just an amphetamine. But so we're gonna entice the kids, market to the kids with the gummy meth, but we can't have more than 15 milligrams in a marijuana gummy because of the children? I get so confused. Apparently, what about the children only applies when we're talking about marijuana. Alcohol, prescription drugs, the rest of that stuff. Good luck, kids. Hey, folks, for everybody here in Aspen, Colorado, I'm Radical Russ. Stay tuned for Hour 2, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at radicalruss.com. You're growing, you're giant, you're rolling.